Tuesday, January 29th, 1993. I am Ward Russell, a member of the Historical Committee of the Outrigger Canoe Club. Today, I am in the boardroom of the Outrigger Canoe Club. It's a beautiful morning, together with Wilfred Paul, who I am interviewing for the oral history program of the Outrigger Canoe Club. Wilfred, where were you born?
Where was I born?
Yeah, where and when?
1911. I won't tell you what month because you want to give me a big party or something.
Oh, all right, I will.
I'll be 82 this year, though.
82?
Yeah.
And what month?
What month? See, that gives me away. Make it November.
November?
Yeah.
November? And where were you born?
Honolulu.
Where were you born here?
In Kaimakee. You lived in Kaimakee at the time.
Well, what were your parents? Tell me a little bit about your parents.
Well, my dad was in the Navy when he met my mother in here. He was on the Great White Fleet going around the world.
Oh, yeah, really?
And my mother and family lived here.
Uh-huh.
She was born in the Marquesas in Nicohiva. And my grandfather was an old sea captain. He used to trade between the South Pacific and the smaller islands. And he imbibed too much, I think, and wrecked a couple of boats. So they moved up here. And they lived down in Kakaako, which was quite a town in those days.
Yeah.
And they were going on board this battleship, and my dad was at the gangplank. He was a chief petty officer, I guess, at the time. He was on duty to take people around and met my mother, and boom, like that. First sight, where they fell in love, I guess. And
what year was that?
1903, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was
1903, yeah.
But you are a real commander.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, then, tell me about your education.
Well, I started at Lilio Kalani in Kaimakee,
uh-huh.
And then my dad was called back in the Navy in 1917. We moved to Pearl Harbor, and I went to a makeshift school there for about a year and a half and didn't learn a damn thing. In fact, I used to catch the bus, go to Pawa Junction, catch the train up and then get off in Ivalay and catch a streetcar and go up to Kaimakee. And that took me about an hour and a half one way. And I wasn't a very good student anyway, so after a year and a half, then they sent me back to St. Louis. I was supposed to go in the third grade, and they put me back in the second grade. And I was there for about a year, and then they took me out and I went to Central Grammar.
Oh, Central Grammar.
Yeah. And then from Central Grammar, I wasn't doing too well, so they sent me Valley School up in Nuuanu. I don't know if you remember Valley School.
Yes, I remember that.
And then the school folded up in 19... I don't know, I was in the seventh grade then, and most all the kids were going to Punahou. And I had my mother was a taught swimming for the YWCA at the Castle Pool here, George Castle's pool, and she offered me a scholarship at Punahou my freshman year, and my mother wouldn't even, didn't want me to go and meet girls, I guess, so they sent me back to St. Louis.
Oh, really?
And, which I hated, God, I hated that damn school. And I was there 4 years, and then I left there my junior year, and I went to Punahou. So transferring from St. Louis to Punahou, I lost another year, and that's how I got into Punahou, with a scholarship. But I could have had it since my freshman year. You know.
You got a scholarship at Punahou.
Yeah.
What was your reaction when you first entered Punahou?
I was shy and scared and didn't know how to act because I'd been in 4 years with nothing but boys all around me in school, and of course I knew most all the kids because playing with them. We lived in Mono Valley, across from the University of Hawaii, so I knew most of the kids in my age. But even then, I was kind of heel about it, you know. And
well, you—I know, of course. You were Punahou in your junior and senior.
Junior and senior year. Yeah,
I know you were quite active in sports.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What sports did you engage in at Punahou?
Three sports: football, track, and swimming. I went out for baseball, but Dad Center got after me. He says, "You can't go out for baseball. You got to go on the swimming team." So that's why I made three letters in those sports, one in each. But that was the story of my life there.
Well, when did you join the Outrigger Canoe Club?
I joined the Outrigger in 1921, but I used to use a club a lot. My mother was a member then prior to going to the Ulinio Club, and she used to go out surfing, and there was a outs, which was where the Royal Hawaiian Hotel was. It was a hotel called the Seaside Hotel.
Oh, yes.
And right opposite that was a pier way out in the, I guess about 200 yards offshore. So she'd take me out on the surfboard and leave me on this pier, and then she'd go surfing and come back and pick me up.
And of course, the old Moana Pier.
No. This was a
by the seaside.
No. Right opposite where the Royal Hawaiian Hotel is. They had four railroad tracks.
Oh, really?
In the ground, and they had a platform there. You don't remember that?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
No.
And I know they took that down in the very early 20s, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I went out surfing once with my mother, and I was so damn scared that she said the heck with it. So that's why she left me on the pier on a leash, so I couldn't get too close to the edge, you know. then she left and went to the Ulinu Club. So then I joined the Outrigger in 1921.
Oh, she left. Was she a member? She was a member of the Outrigger.
Yeah, she was a member of the Outrigger, and then she joined the Ulinu.
And then she joined the Ulinu.
Yeah.
Now, was that about the time when the women's, the Outrigger, formed the Ulinu Club?
Yeah.
I don't know
what year that was, though.
She must have been one of the original members.
I think she was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then at that time, that's when you joined the Outrigger.
That's when I joined the Outrigger.
Had you, let's see, you would be 10 years old.
Yeah, just 10.
Had you started to, and you had started to surf?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I surfed and swam, and the funny part of it was I was 4 years old, I guess. My mother taught me how to swim, uh-huh. And we moved to Pearl Harbor, and I wouldn't go swimming because it was deep.
Oh.
And my brother shoved me off the pier, and I was surprised that I could swim in deep water. But at the Outrigger, believe it or not, I played... I was on the track team. The Outrigger had a track team in those days.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Track, and I was on the swimming team, and then on the volleyball team. And
can you remember any of the names of the kids that you ran a track with, played volleyball with? Long time ago.
Too long ago, yeah. I forgot.
But I do remember.
They were all older. They were all older than me. That was the only thing. I was the youngest on the track team. I was only 14, I guess, 15 or something like that. I wasn't very good. I used to stay too long in the same place.
We have some pictures in our archives of the track squads. They had a football team too, if I remember, didn't they?
I'm not sure. Rowing clubs did, but I'm not sure about the Outrigger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But they had a pretty good track team for a couple of years. They had Mortimer Lydgate.
Oh yeah, Mort Lydgate. Yes.
And Percy Lydgate and Pump Serrell.
Yeah.
And he was at Through the Hammer. And I think you mentioned, who did you mention that you interviewed?
Oh, Harold Harvey.
Yeah, Harold Harvey was.
That's right.
Yeah, he was on the track team.
Uh-huh. Was this at the Outrigger track team?
Outrigger track team, yeah.
What event did you?
I ran the quarter mile, tried to run the quarter mile.
Tried to
run. I think I was just on the relay team, though.
Uh-huh.
And then we had all our races out at Paloma. That was before the university had a track team also. I don't know how well we've done. I don't think we won many events.
Well, that's interesting. You know, you're the first person I've interviewed that has even mentioned any participation in other than swimming or volleyball or surfing. For example, a track team was something that not anybody has ever referred to.
Oh, yeah, water polo and surfboard polo, too.
Well, you had water polo.
We were the water polo team. We won the championship, I think, a couple of years in water polo.
Uh-huh.
And the surfboard polo was only 1 year. I think that was for the entertainment of the tourists. We just used to play against the Huinello Club.
Uh-huh.
Whittle in the Kanamokos and all that bunch.
Yeah. Where did you have? Where did you conduct these events? Right on the beach in front of the club.
Yeah, swimming. We used to swim at the Puno Pool.
At Puno Pool.
And then 1 year we raced down in the harbor, uh-huh. And the rest of the time right in front of the Outrigger. On these long distance swims and things like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, then, what year did you graduate from Pinole Hall?
1931.
1931.
Not with honors, though.
You were still a member of the Outrigger at that time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you went on to college.
I left it with the University of Oregon right in September of 31.
31. Well, now, how long did you stay a member of the Outrigger Canoe Club?
Well, I rejoined in 1960.
Well, when did you leave the Outrigger Canoe Club?
1931.
What were the circumstances of your leaving the club?
Well, we had a little hakaki at the Moana in celebration of winning the surfboard polo championship.
Polo championship. Polo.
Yeah, and a bunch of us were bending silverware and everything else, which was with the displeasure.
Bending silverware?
Well, it was common ordinary silver. Eating utensils.
Yeah.
And the manager of the Outrigger, the manager of the Moana Hotel didn't take to that too well. And I think Philip Anima Banks was president of the Outrigger at that time. And
yes.
And he got all of us together, and only two of us, Mickey Carmichael and myself, were the only ones that confessed that we did it. The rest wouldn't confess. And they wanted us to name the rest of them at the table with us. And we wouldn't name the name, so they suspended. They said they were going to suspend me for 2 months. And I says, you can't suspend me, I quit. I'm going away to college. And then when I came back, Dad Center tried to get me to rejoin the Outrigger. But by then, Duty Miller was ahead of the Guinello, and he was a good friend of the family. So he says, hey, come and paddle for us. So I says, okay.
Well, now, had you rejoined the Outrigger at that point?
No, I was going to. But
you were going to?
Yeah. But I was still kind of hoo-hoo about the club suspending me.
So you joined the Brunello instead?
Yeah, I didn't join. Never paid dues there. I was just a member, I guess.
Well, no.
And Fred Steer was, we were only two Howleys in the club, Fred Steer and myself.
I remember, about
1933.
Because yeah. We all went over to Kona, mm-hmm. to the
first
canoe races. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember because we went over on the...
Itasca.
Humula, I guess.
The Humula, yeah.
Yeah, we went.
Next year with the Itasca.
I went over with the Huinello gang,
mm-hmm.
and it was you and Fred Steer,
mm-hmm.
and Squeeze Kamana, yeah. and a whole bunch of them. Mm-hmm. Tell me about what it, you raced against the Outrigger.
Well, we raced against the Outrigger. We beat the Outrigger both times, but the Minolui was the team that won the championship that year. Minolui, yeah.
They had paddled all the way from Villalee up to Kona.
Yeah, and they were fishermen, and they came in this canoe that must have weighed about twice the weight of the canoes that we raced in. But they was, oh God, they were powerful guys. They had one stroke, which was fast, because they used to chase the school of fish, you know. So we couldn't catch them. But we did win the two-man. Ena McKinney and myself won the two-man.
Ena McKinney?
Yeah, but we were disqualified because we ended in the wrong... finish line. We moved the lane, but we were quite a bit ahead of them, I guess, but they still disqualified us.
Well, I remember about that time, you were quite active in rowing.
Yeah, I rowed for Myrtles. And, yeah, I rowed for Myrtles from kid crew up to senior crew.
Kid crew to senior crew.
We used to go to Hilo every year.
I can remember when you and Yabu Taylor...
Oh, yeah, he was a coxman.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Yabu was a wonderful coxman. And I remember one year we were, I was stroking the junior crew, and it was funny because Yabo says, now the only crew we have to beat is Hilo. If we beat Hilo, we win the race. And they were all lined up and everything else, so we took off. And coming back, we didn't hear the Hilo band playing the Hilo march. So I had a hunch that we were ahead, so I upped the stroke a bit, and we came into ahead of Hilo. But the Navy was about four lanes below us, and they beat us by about a length. Joe Silva was stroked for the.
He was a perennial stroke for the Navy.
But we beat Hilo, but the Navy beat us. So we took second.
Well, you and Yabo used to engage in those fantastic wrestling matches.
Oh, yeah. You mean Yabo and I?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we were just fooling around. You know.
Fooling around. He was about 5 feet.
About 5'4" or 5'5" or something like that.
Weighed about what?
But I weighed around about 190 at the time. I was still in high school. But I was the villain, and I used to fake all these things, you know, and he'd throw me down, kick me in the okoli and everything else. We used to have a lot of fun. A lot of people thought we were real serious about it. You know?
Well, I know. We had it was a circus.
Yeah.
I was coxing, too. Remember?
Was that? That's right. I remember you did.
Oh, that was a fun year.
But everybody got mad at me because picking on this small guy.
But he was tough.
Oh, he was a strong guy, and he had a nobody fool around him. You know, he was.
Well, that, you rejoined the Outrigger in
1960. Yeah, I was out working for Del Monte out in the pineapple fields, and Dad Center came out with some friends of his, and I took him in the fields and showed him the pineapples and gave him some pineapples. He says, "By the way, he says, why don't you join the Outrigger again?" And I says, "Yeah, the initiation is pretty high." Oh no, we'll skip that because you were a member way back. I says, okay, so I'll rejoin. So I rejoined in January. I think it was January 1960.
So what amounts to it, you remember from 1911
to 1921, 10 years.
1921 to 1931, 10 mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. And then from 1960 to 1993. You've been a member for 46 years.
I guess so. I would have been a member over 70 years if I stayed.
Yeah. Well, you are, you know. What was 1960? During the war years, where were you?
Oh, we were in Molokai at the time. I was in charge of the Molokai Standard Oil plant on Molokai.
Oh, that's right.
We lived there 10 years. Uh-huh. And I started to train the Molokai crew for this Molokai canoe race, the first one, you know.
Uh-huh.
But just then I got transferred to Waiua. So I didn't get in that race, otherwise I would have won. Because when we left Molokai, instead of going straight for Oahu, I spoke to a lot of the fishermen up there. And they said, oh, you go north and you'll get in this current. And then you can take off, which they did, and they won that year. Yeah. But there was only two clubs, I think, maybe three clubs, Outrigger, Molokai, and one other club. I can't think of the name.
Waikiki Surf.
Waikiki Surf, I guess. But Molokai, again, they were all these big husky Hawaiians that did a lot of fishing. And
what I'd like to do is to talk a little bit about your impressions of the club in the years that you remember, from 1921 to 1931, the 10 years, because those are the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
You must have had. The reason I ask you this is I was reminiscing with Kip Afuna.
Oh.
He talked a great deal about you and the formation of the beach services. Mm-hmm. So, do you remember?
Yeah, this Bill Mulahi was the one, I think, and Sally Hale, they formed the beach services. But I didn't get into that. My mother didn't want me to get mixed up in that because she was afraid I'd be a beach bum. So I say, but the old club was great, full of Japanese, full of the name of Sasaki. He wasn't exactly the manager, but his word was...
he was an institution.
Yeah, he was there. And then there was a guy named Murray. He was in charge of the kitchen and everything. Those two guys, if we did anything wrong, boy, we got kicked in the coccoli and everything else. And we obeyed them. When they spoke, we stopped and doing what we did. But I remember double deckers were 10 cents. And Pop Ford, he would always like to be massaged. And when we got through massaging, he'd buy us a double decker or a cone. They had these candy cones, ice cream cones, you know, for 5 cents. And those were good days. The outrigger was a... Then they had a little volleyball court there, and every day they played volleyball. The businessmen would come out and play, you know, six-man team. And it was a lot of fun. It was a great club.
Wilfred, when we left off at last, our first interview, we had covered some of your activities at the club during the period you remember from 1921 to 1931, mm-hmm. before you went off to Oregon to college. In general, what was your impression of the club during that period that you remember when you were a youngster from the 20 to...
It was a good club, and us young kids would always worship the older guys, you know, the big guys, we used to call them, and we were always hoping something would be a big guy so we could participate in some of the events like volleyball and surfing the way they did. But it was a great club. We enjoyed it very much.
Do you remember some of the big guys?
Oh, it was Mott Smith, and there was Yabo Taylor was one of the bigger guys. Not in stature, but he was a big guy. And, of course, he's offhand. I don't
know. I get this. You mentioned Alexander Hume Ford. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah, very well. Mm-hmm.
Tell us about him.
He was quite a character. He was always like young kids, and he always wanted to be massaged. He always had back trouble or something like that. And after we gave him a little rub down, he'd lay down on the bench in the locker room. He'd buy us ice cream cone or a double decker or something like that. And when everyone traveled, he always sent us young kids little souvenirs or things like that.
Uh-huh.
And I had one where these Chinese were sawing wood, and he said they were making a surfboard. This was when he was in Hong Kong.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He was quite a character. And another time he came back to Australia with a boomerang for me. But he had a Model T, and the gas tank of the Model T was on the front seat. And he had the boomerang there. And I don't know, some big guy got in and sat on it and broke the boomerang in half. And he was mad at the ticket. But he was a nice guy. I liked him. He was very jovial. And he took a great pride in the club. And did everything he could do to get kids interested in different activities, you know. Mm-hmm.
Was Dad Center active at that time?
Yeah, he was a swimming coach.
Uh-huh.
And he was kind of an unknown ruler of the club, I guess, at the time, you know.
when Dad spoke, everybody listened to him, and he was always helping the kids out. And he was a heck of a good coach. He taught me a lot.
Did he coach at Punahou? Did he coach at Punahou?
Yeah. My senior year,
He was your coach in the senior year.
He was coach, huh?
And then Dupiak took off after that.
After that.
Because when I first went, he was my coach, too.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Oh, I remember kicking off the team because you were swimming in the lanes.
Oh, yeah.
I used to dive and see how close I could get to you.
Yeah.
But he didn't like that. But he asked me back on.
Yeah.
Are there any other management people that you can remember within that period?
Well, there was a Quinn from the fertilizer company. R.C. Quinn, what was his name? Not Quinn.
No, Arthur Smith.
Smith, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was very active in teaching us kids how to play volleyball and things like that.
Oh, you know, nobody's ever mentioned IQ in teaching.
Yeah.
Because he was president. He was president twice. Then and then later on he became president.
He was going on volleyball, and he was always showing his kids how to play. And we'd play one man against him, but could never beat him. It was he and remember Chippy Chase?
Oh, yeah.
Those two guys were good single volleyball players. You couldn't wear them out. They'd just keep hitting the ball back. No jumping and slamming in those days, you know, or that particular game.
How about the Beach Boys? Do you remember any recollection of any particular Beach Boys?
Yeah, there was Paul Kilaw and Peter Mokia, Hiram Anahew, and of course Sam Kanamoko was also a Beach Boy. And I don't think Sargent was, but then there was Chick Daniels.
Oh yeah.
And
Panama
Dave, yeah. And there was one guy that was we call him Cocky or something. He had a dislocated jaw.
Oh yeah.
But he could sure play the ukulele. And Squeeze Kamana, he came around the beach for a while.
Squeeze was quite a paddler, didn't he? He played for Lee Nellis.
He played a hell of a good ukulele player.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's a husky guy.
Yeah.
Nobody fooled around him. But he's a real kind guy. You know?
You mentioned swimming against the Kanamokas.
Well, just Sergeant.
Was it Sergeant?
It was just Sergeant. The others were older than us and too fast for us. But Sergeant was only a couple of years older than me, and we used to participate in the events, but I could never beat the guy.
Who else did you swim against, do you remember?
I guess there was a Tom Sharp and Buddy Crabb.
But Buddy.
Yeah, Buddy was a good swimmer too, but not as good as Boy. He would have been a better swimmer if he trained more, but I think his father ruined him. His father kept after him all the time, do this or do that. Do what Buster's doing, like, how come? And Buddy wasn't that type of a guy.
I don't know, they used to say Buddy had potential of being even greater than Ben.
Yeah, he was, huh? He was a heck of a good short distance swimmer.
Yeah.
But he lost interest in it because his father was pushing him too much.
I guess he wanted him to be like Buster.
Yeah. I know his father, any meet his father with a stopwatch and walk along the pool as he was swimming, you know, come on, go fast, yelling at him.
what events did you swim at Punahou?
100 freestyle and 50 freestyle and 100 breaststroke. And the relay team.
The relays. Yeah. Uh-huh. And getting back to college, you rode for Oregon. Did you row?
No, Oregon didn't have any rowing teams.
Well, we didn't.
Washington had the rowing team. I played football for.
You played football for.
Played in the freshman team, which we won the Northwest Championship. A heck of a good team. Later, two guys moved to Minnesota and they became All Americans.
Oh, really?
A guard and a fullback. And then I swam as captain of the swimming team at Oregon.
You say you're captain?
Yeah.
Well, the swimming team at Oregon?
Oh, the swimming team. I turned out for track, but they said, no, you're going to go to the swimming team. and that came about the same time as baseball. I thought I'd like to try baseball. I said, no, you're on the swimming team.
Let's see. Can you recall any other? Oh, I remember you talked about surfing. It's strange you had surfing once from Duke. You said something about an airplane that had.
Oh, yeah. There was a fellow line, his name was Lieutenant Alkire, and he was stunning and showing off and had an old de Havilland letting his wheels touch the water, you know, and they'd come over the moor and appear and over the pier like that.
Really?
And he banked, and his wing caught the wave, a small wave, and it flipped him over. And he wasn't hurt, but Duke, I can see Duke now, he grabbed a surfboard, he was out there like that, pulled the guy in, got him on the board, and the guy wasn't hurt. He had a little cut in his head, bleeding a little bit on it. And everybody's all worried about if he was badly hurt. And the first thing he said, anybody got a cigarette? And that's when I thought, good God, a cigarette must really be something. I was only about 11 or 12, I guess, at the time. And then the next, people went out and they started. They had fiber on the plane, not metal or anything else. It was the fiber.
Oh, the fabric.
Fabric, yeah. Yeah. And the next day, there was nothing left but the skeleton of the plane. People went out to souvenirs and cutting all this stuff up, you know?
Was it Old De Havilland?
No, Old De Havilland, yeah.
What was the guy's name?
Alkier.
Alkier.
I don't know how you spell A-L-K-I-E-R or something like that. Uh-huh. But he was noted for his stunning at low altitudes, you know. Right. Those days, I guess they didn't have any federation
rules
about...
Yeah, it's going to
be rules about... Yeah, rules
CAA.
About...
CAA, so... Huh? CAA or whatever.
It's yeah.
Can you recall any other air racing experiences that you had?
Yeah, there used to be a stream that came... Oh, there used to be a stream that came down before they put in a canal, and then it came right by the outrigger, between the outrigger and the Moore Hotel. There was a big pond there, and it was warm water. We used to like to swim in there because it was nice and warm. But it was stagnant and dirty then. And then if you came down in a new bathing suit, you put a new... In those days, you had to wear bathing suits, no trunks. If you have a new bathing suit, bang, they'd throw you in the... Give you a funnel swing into the pond to initiate your new bathing suit. Yeah.
So, I mean, when you were a kid, if you had a new bathing suit, they dumped you in the pond.
Yeah, just dumped you in the pond. Huh? And the pond, when it got full after heavy rain, it would flow out and break through the sandbar into the ocean.
Whereabouts would the pond be now in relation to the old club?
Well, as you came in the entrance, it was right by Calico Avenue. The stream went under the bridge under Calico Avenue. Well, not a bridge, but it was a kind of flume-like or a conduit.
Would that be where the old parking lot was?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh.
Just between the Moana and the club?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it was on the club premises, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
There was no parking there. Of course, there was ample parking on the street in those days, and not many people had cars anyway.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I can always remember we'd go in that water because it was nice and warm. Dirty, though. It came from Mono Stream and Palo Stream.
You know? Yeah, I could think of mine. What was the club like? Do you remember the building?
Well, they had one building where they had the concessions, and in back of that they had the kitchen, and then they had the locker rooms. There was a locker room for the kids, and the seniors had another locker room. You go upstairs in this locker room. And then on the top they had a big place where you could dry your bathing suits, clotheslines, and everything else. And then in the front they had this great two big pavilions up there at Joanne. And these had dancing parties. That's the one they moved up to later moved up next to Calico, I remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And under it, they kept the canoes, and in back of that, they had lockers for surfing. And one thing happened, there was a fellow by the name of Gillespie. He worked in one of the banks I'd ever
heard. Oh, Dr. Gillespie.
Yeah, he did. I think it's the same. I don't know what his first name was, but he embezzled some money.
Oh.
I don't know how much, but then he had it in a gallon coffee can, and he had it buried under the stairs going up to the men's locker room.
You're kidding.
I don't know how much money was in there, maybe a couple of $1,000. And when they caught up with them, everything, and they came, and we kids used to say, gee, we used to walk them down here, we never knew all that money was buried there, you know.
For goodness sake.
Yeah.
What was the name of it?
His last name was Gillespie. Gillespie, right.
Yeah, I think.
And he served time for that.
Did he serve time?
Oh, yeah. They caught up with him.
That must have been quite an episode with all the kids wondering what he was up to.
I'm pretty sure Gillespie was his name. Yeah. It sounded like that anyway.
You checked back into
the... Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I remember we were all around there when the police came and everything. They dug up this can and here they opened up and gave us all this money. A lot of it was silver silver money, but there was a lot of paper money, too. It was old-fashioned, big dollar, big paper money.
But Charlie Amaro was quite a character in those days. You remember Charlie?
Yeah, but he was in the opera. He was, we know him.
Mostly we know
him.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was a good singer, and he had his own troupe.
You know, there's a period there between 1930, when you came back, and then we joined in 1960. Of course, you were all over the different islands and working and everything else. But did you spend much time at that rigger during that particular period?
When we came down on vacation, Wolfhard and Gardbo, he always got me a guest card.
Uh-huh.
And then on Molokai, I met Walter McFarlane. He tried to get me back into the club. That was in the early part of the war, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I still wouldn't join the club. Well, I didn't think I should because I was living on Molokai. I didn't know when I'd be back to Island Oahu again.
Well, let's see. You were in the club 60, so it wasn't very long before we moved down to this new location.
Right. Uh-huh.
Do you remember any controversy that became the surrounding the move?
Yeah, a lot of the members didn't want to move, and they figured, well, we've got a perfect spot here for the surfing is right out here and all that. But I was one of them that thought that was a good idea to get away from all this the tourist crowd, you know, because the Royal Hawaiian and the Moana people were kind of pushing us in. There's no place to park. They did have a parking lot next to the Moana Hotel, but that wasn't happy for the members.
Well, then before that, there was one across the street.
Yeah.
Well, I can remember there. Anybody and everybody would walk off the beach into the club, too.
Yeah, that's right. They had no police or anything else, no security in them.
Did you attend any of the meetings that we had when we had made presentations to the membership about the status of the move?
Yeah, I attended a couple of them. I voted for it.
Yeah, you voted for it?
Yeah. I don't know if my vote meant much, but you were president then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, man. It was controversial times.
It's the same thing happened to my dad. It was an elk. The Elks Club was in town, and they wanted to move out to Castle Home.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we're going to go way out in the sticks, way out in the country and everything else. That was the best move they ever made.
Yeah. Well, your dad said, nobody's ever mentioned that.
Is that right? I don't know what year that was. That was in the